From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. Andrew, last week we were talking about Perfmon.
Yeah, and more specifically counters, making perf counters for Perfmon.
Making your own Perfmon counters.
And yeah, we're going to move into something we don't usually do much here. We don't do much coding and development, and so showing you how to write performance counters. Last week was about more the statistical side of performance counters and some of the math that's involved. Mm-hmm. And today's going to be about looking at the XML. We're going to use a new system that came out in, I think it was Vista, where instead of writing like the code as any files and stuff like that, you write this XML code or XML file, a manifest, and it compiles into code. And then you just call functions that it provides. It's the preferred way of doing it. This is a very C-centric way of doing it. .NET has equivalents. So just go the .NET way if you're a .NET person. If you want a .NET example, put it in the show notes and we'll tack on an episode on the end converting all this C styling to C sharp.
Now, so this is essentially the process that apps like SQL and Exchange, that sort of thing do when you install them and you get all these new performance counters.
Yeah, I did a search when I was, I've been coding this internally last couple of weeks, and I just searched internally and I found like thousands of these manifest files. Hmm. It's just the way that Microsoft writes its C-based performance counters, and also how it writes its event logs, which is a manifestation, I call it a channel manifestation of ETW, and that will be the things we'll talk about next after we've finished talking about performance counters. We'll actually extend the XML file and actually add event logs to it as well. Mm-hmm. With anything XML-y, there's also obviously a schema involved. When you compile, the compiler will spit up error codes or error strings that actually describe from the XSD what you did wrong. So it's quite easy to debug your XML mistakes and stuff. The XML, I'll post it on the website. It's actually quite hard to get started. I didn't find a very good example myself to get started. So I'll post this whole project on the SkyDrive for the show and you can like modify it. The only thing I'm going to point out is make sure you make new GUIDs when you're doing this. Don't reuse mine. If you've got Visual Studio installed and type GUID, you'll get a GUID generator tool. And then you can just, and in this case, we just want a simple string type GUID, you can get a new GUID. When it comes to GUIDs, don't hack them. Don't make your own.
Don't just go change it.
No, because
like, I'll change that 3 to a 4.
Yeah, because they're unique because of your hardware, not because of you fiddling with it.
All right. So it's not guaranteed to be unique if you go change it yourself manually.
Yeah, and I think it's based on your network MAC address or something, or it's something hardware-y, right?
Not actually sure, but yeah, there's probably some component to that.
Yeah, I think it's
probably also based on the time or something.
Oh, it's definitely time.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure. I think it's your MAC address, and also I think maybe your serial number of your hard drive as well. Mm. I think it all contribute to the uniqueness.
Well, so it's probably documented out there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. You go to Wikipedia or something. You look it up. So this is diving into the XML. As you see, I've called it .man. It's a kind of like a standard to call it a manifest file, and either .manifest or .man. If you're in the .NET world, this is also where you put all your not your contracts, but your assertions about your program saying, hey, I need to run elevated and all that type of stuff. And this is the things that cause the UAC prompt to pop up if you need to be elevated to run and stuff like that. Same type of file. And it gets compiled as a resource into your application. As far as performance counters go, it's in the instrumentation and then counters namespace. And then this counters area is controlled by this schema. As you can see, it came out a while ago, 2005. I think 2005 is Vista, right?
Yes. Yeah. That would have been between Server 03 and Vista. So it would have been during the Vista
period. Yeah. So what you're doing is making a provider. A provider is what the word provider says. It's a manifestation of counters. I'm not sure if you can have more than one provider, but normally you only need one. And then you have counter sets. And the name here, the MyApp in my case, is the name you'll see in Performance Monitor. So if you need to have multiple providers, like .NET has like 20, you would have 20 counter sets. Starting at the top, here's the provider. How do you work out what these entries are and all that type of stuff? Well, you've got the schema, so you're going to get IntelliSense as you type. And so and then you can choose from the IntelliSense what properties there are. The help for online is really good. There's a thing called Performance Counter Schema, and I think if you type Performance Counter Schema in Bing, it is the number one hit. Here it is. It's the number one hit. This goes through what everything's about. What the crux of where you want to look is in this complex type. So simple types is just the fundamentals of, hey, this is a string, this is a int, that type of stuff. And then the complex types are defining nodes in the XML which has attributes. So for example, the one we're looking at is provider. And so we look for the provider complex type. All right, and then you'll see the XSD for this area and all the rules that apply. And then down the bottom, in more MSDN style, it has all of the attributes, and then it's children. So the provider has the counter sets, which is the nodes in Process Monitor, and you can have more than one of those. And then you have all these things. As you go through the XML, it's just a matter of reading each one of these nodes and understanding what it means. It takes a bit of playing around if you don't know anything. Mm-hmm. So I suggest you just copy the code I've got. It tends to be a good middle ground where you haven't gone too verbose and too little. What I don't have is localization. So the strings are hard-coded in the counters at the moment. So if you're running French or German or something, it won't pick up a difference. When we go through the events for the event log, localization is mandatory rather than optional, as it is here, and we'll go through localization then. But for now, it's just hard-coded strings in the thing. When it comes to provider, it's just a matter of doing what we've got here. User mode's about the only one that's you have to be semi-aware of. If you're a device driver, you would use kernel mode, and if you're an app, you'd use user mode. Symbol is used a lot for the way that the code is compiled. So you can't have spaces in the names and stuff like that. And I don't think you can have negative either because of the negative sign, as in subtraction. You've got to have like underscores. So when it compiles to code, you'll see this type of name being used. Let's get to counter set. So counter set. This URI is a way of accessing the counter programmatically. So if you ask the performance counter library, I want the value, you can use this URI to access it. So you need to set up a namespace that's appropriate. So matching it with your application's namespace is a wise idea, of course. Mm-hmm. Name, and then we get into numbers. And then description is what you'd see down the bottom of the screen when you click on it. These numbers are always multiples of two, regardless of where it is here and below, these name and name IDs and description IDs. The reason why they're a multiple of two is when you compile the code, the one above it, as in like this is 1002, 1003 will also get generated, right? And so when it makes the string resource of your file, you have to have space for the next one. And so everything has to be two apart. Now, when you make strings normally for your application, it tends to be down in the 1, 2, 3 type range, like string resources for like your title bar and all that type of stuff. So try to start an offset that's way off. What I've done is at this hierarchical level, at the counter set, I've called this the 1000 level. And then when it's a child of that, like the counter, I started at the 2000 level. Right, just to
give yourself enough room.
A bit of name, also a bit of a standardization of where did this come from type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Instances is, as we described last week, to do with how you do aggregation. And so it's not aggregation within the counter, it's aggregation across instances of the counter. So what I mean by that is if I run my process once, you'll end up with one instance in Process Monitor, right? And for example, what we showed last week was hard drives, right? It listed three hard drive controllers. There's three hard drive controllers on my box, one for three different drives, or drive sets. And so it ended up with three instances. If you have single, it will only allow one instance. And if two happen to be running at the same time, if you run the exe at the same time, it will just merge them together as if the data came from one instance, right? And the mathematics is a bit, I don't think it's actually defined. Hmm. When you use multiple, you'll get multiple instances and you can individually look at them, but you will not get the underscore total word, right? It just purely is individual instances that you can choose.
Okay.
Multiple aggregate means that we'll add the underscore total concept and allow you to aggregate across instances. So if you have something like request per second, and one's running at 5 per second and one's running at 7 per second, you have to make a decision about, do you want the average request across all instances, or the sum, or the max, or the min? And that's where this comes down here. So this aggregate one at the counter level defines how this aggregation works at the counter set level. And so when it comes to how many requests have I ever received on this box, which is what this counter is, I want a sum.
Right.
But when I want to see what the average difference is, how many requests per second I'm getting, or per period, I want to use an average, right? Well, I could have gone sum though. I could have gone how many, it's purely up to you to decide how you want it to be shown. Mm-hmm. It could have been max, it could have been min, all those things. So where does this come from? Counter is a complex type. So we choose the counter's complex type and then scroll down and then it will explain, that's counter, not comp counters. Down here, what I'm just talking about right here, explains it right here. And then you actually can exclude it from the underscore total list. So even though it exists at an instance level, you can make it so it isn't available at the underscore total type thing, because it may not just be appropriate, right? So aggregation, you have to make a decision about that. Now, what happens if you wanted to aggregate it both ways? Well, all you'd have to do is make the counter twice or three times, and then copy this, have one says average, have one that says sum, and then give them slightly different names to suggest, you know, put a bracket out on the end or something, suggesting what the difference is. And so if you do care about like all the four different types, or you're not sure which one you need, make all four different types. Now you will end up with four pieces of data. Performance counters are shared memory. What happens is the exe that is running the performance counter makes shared memory, and then performance library version 2 shares that memory into its process space and periodically reads the memory out of the shared memory, right? Because it's all the same block of memory in every process. So if you want to have multiple counters, then you need to have multiple ways of doing that. You actually can, I don't think I've got it in my example here. There's an attribute ability. So I'll get to I'll explain later why there's no display, but you can actually say, instead of using the APIs to increment or decrement the counter, making it go up and down, or set it, so there's set, increment, and decrement, you actually can say, I want to map this to a pointer. So instead of calling functions on it and saying change variable X, what you do is you set an attribute in here. It says counter attribute. Actually, let's find out what it is. I think it's what is it called? Mapped. As reference. And what you do is you set the attribute in the XML, and what will happen is, when you're instantiating it in the code, you'll associate the counter with a block of memory, and usually it's like a global or something in your code. So instead of having to call the API to do the work, you just map that global's address space into the counter's address space, and then you can just change the counter. So you can go like global plus equal 5.
Right? Okay.
So it brings you back down to code that you don't even realize is a performance counter. So you can say, well, we've always had this global that tracks X.
Right.
Let's just say at the initialization, let's associate that global variable with the performance library, and then we don't have to change any code anywhere to make it update. Now, with anything that's global, if you're a single-threaded app, it's fine, right? You just go and update the global. As soon as you're in the multi-threading land, and this is regardless of whether it is or isn't associated with a counter, you've got to be, you've got to have locking around it so you don't get torn reads.
Mm-hmm.
So the example that we give a lot when trying to explain this is, let's try, say we've got A and we're trying to add one to it. And we start with a value of two. So I'm thread A, well, I'm thread one, and I read A and it's two. And then Chad reads, who's another thread, reads A and it's two. I add one to it and it's equal to three, and I write three back. And then Chad's thread adds one to it and makes it the three and writes it back. And then we end up with a three in the global.
Should be
a four.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's commands called interlocked increment and decrement and interlocked exchange. And these are atomically safe commands that you can do at CPU level, the exchange assembler. The other way of doing it is to then treat it as a more of a larger locking metaphor, so like put a critical section around it or some other locking metaphor.
And you mentioned that you don't have to use this reference thing. There's also, you can have it just
direct.
Call the increment and call it. Yeah. Now, if you do those, does it include those locking mechanisms?
I believe so, yes. I believe it's atomic, yeah. So like, I'm not going to go through the code today, but the command is here. Perf increment u long, this happens to be a 64-bit counter.
Uh-huh.
And you say, here's roughly the handle to the counters, the handle to the instance that you made. This is an enumeration that I wrote, it's just a magic number, and then how much I want to increment it by. So in this case, I increment these two by one, but this one I increment it by a big number, which is time in milliseconds, time in frequency counts.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to the XML, that's roughly all you do, is you copy it down, this basic set of data you've got, and make a counter for every reason. If the reason is statistically different but driven by the same data, that's okay. And actually, these first two examples, this one and this one, are actually driven by the same data. In the code, you'll note that we just increment them by one whenever we get a request.
Mm-hmm.
And so we increment two counters for two different reasons. One's for the overall climb of the request, and one is the delta per period.
The average.
Now, when it comes to scaling, what have I done here? Yeah. So I'm going to run this. Typing terrible today. There we go. So. This is generating traffic. We'll go through this more next week, the logic behind it. When you choose something on a graph, here's my app, here's the three counters. Now, there was four counters in the file, right? But there's only three counters here, and we'll get back to that very soon.
Okay.
We'll just choose this instance. What you'll see is, see how it's got 10 times, 1 times, and 0.01 times?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I worked out that the scale of this app, which makes it easily viewable on the screen, needs that factor applied to it. So this top one is in seconds between 0 and 10. Well, on a 0 to 100 scale, it means it's kind of squished at the bottom, so I times it by 10.
Mm-hmm.
Request in a period, I could have equally done that as well. But just to be different, I kind of kept it different.
Mm-hmm.
And then the number of requests over all time, I gave it a 0.01 factor, just to make it so it has a nice slight rise to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can tweak this; these need to be tweaked. Now, if you don't set these, then you're going to end up with 1.0, and some things are just going to be way off scale, right?
Right.
So how you do that in the XML is this default scale. So there's two things about this, the level, the detail. There's either standard or I think it's advanced, the other one. And then that correlates to in here when you want to go view, I'm not sure where it is actually, but you can say almost see advanced counters. and it gives you more. I don't think that's kind of a really appropriate way of doing it. Just put everything as standard. I don't think hiding things away is really the best approach. But what the default detail level and scale is, it has to do with these numbers. So by default, a value of 0 means 10 to the power of 0, which makes it 1.
Right, okay.
So it's to the power of.
Right.
And so by doing negative 2, negative 1 would be 0.1, mm-hmm. negative 2 would be 0.01. Mm-hmm. And then same in reverse, when you want to go large, a value of 1 is 10 to the power of 1 is 10. Mm. And so that's how you do your scaling. You can go as far as you want both directions. I think it goes up to like 7 in each direction. So quite a broad range.
Mm-hmm. And the user can change that if the default isn't right. But it makes sense to choose appropriate defaults.
Yeah, put some effort in, get the defaults right.
Yeah.
I found that as I was testing my app, I thought I had it right, and then I'd watch it for a while and go, you know what? The actually averages are slightly off by a factor of 10, and I tweaked it up and down. And actually, this was 0.3 last night, and I went, you know what? We're not really there yet. I changed it to 0.2. We have four counters, but why is one missing? And some counters require a nominator and a denominator. And so the collection of the two of them represent a counter. The nominator, the first one, is the name that is used on the screen. And the denominator is statistically kind of irrelevant because it's the base. And so the denominator, sure, you could have it as a counter, but it doesn't really have purpose. I tend to set denominators to no display, so it disappears from the performance monitor. And so in this case, it's how many milliseconds have elapsed for this query,
mm-hmm.
and then how many operations were within that time period. And normally, if you do this type of code, you record the start time of something, you do the op, you record the end time, you log the difference into the top counter in frequency difference, and you say, I did one operation, right? Mm-hmm. But you might do something like, let's say you're decompressing a file, right? Mm-hmm. Or opening something up, or processing a file.
Mm-hmm.
You might wanna say, well, there's 10 processing jobs within this function, and then you say 10 as the denominator, and say, well, the average time per file was smaller. Personally, what I would do is write a counter for the sub work, and then the greater work, and have two counters representing the two, rather than trying to aggregate yourself. Be more one-to-one with your counters, and it allows you to explore the data much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the XML, that's about as complex as it gets. Wherever you see things like name and description, they can be, as I said, moved to a message table, and the syntax is bracket, dollar, string, dot, and then a symbol name. And I said, we'll go through that in event log.
That's for show. Localization purposes?
Yeah, localization purposes. And that's really it. So the XML looks like that. We'll leave it there this week. What's going to go look at the schema. We'll put all the links in the show notes about, you know, the way to read the schema. If you want to play with this, I'll have it on the SkyDrive when this goes live. And where's my IE? And you can find out how we use a command called CTRPP to compile the code. And it's actually not part of Visual Studio. I don't know why, but because the other two commands you need are. But you have to install the SDK to get this. But we'll go through all how to install that next week, how to write your code, how to invoke it, and how to install and uninstall your counters, and how not to trash your registry in the process.
Always a good thing.
Always a good thing. And then we'll look at the performance counters as aggregates a bit more and go from there.
All right. Well, that's our show. As always, if you have questions, comments, put them in the show notes or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.